Third time's the charm. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Today Show, your home for hoops. We're talking about all hoops, WNBA, NBA, college hoops. You get it all because if you got game, you got game, period. You can always watch the Today Show on Players TV and all over my YouTube channel. Now, before we get to today's biggest topic, I'm gonna recap you on my past week. And one of the highlights was joining the boys, the guys, the gentlemen on First Take. Now, this was fun, not just because we got to go back and forth and talk about the Lakers and the Clippers before the battle for LA, but more because we understood the assignment. I mean, purple rain, we all showed up matching. We were a unit, we go together, that's how we do it. We were ready for Easter Sunday's best. The big topics for today, of course, it's LeBron James' legacy as he made history being the first ever NBA player to touch 40,000 points, iconic. And also, we will be recapping everything that you need to know when it comes to women's college hoops, because some people think that there's only one team out there. Nah, the whole field is deep, and this is going to be a March Madness to remember, period. And last but not least, we will play our favorite game, Hot or Not. In this segment, I'll tell you what's hot and what's not. We have to start our show with the big story that LeBron James continues to redefine legacy. He became the first NBA player to reach the milestone of 40,000 points. But to put it into context, no other NBA player has at least 10,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, and 10,000 assists. He literally affects the game at every corner of the court. But when it comes to the complete facet of the game and also making others better, and on top of that, the longevity factor, LeBron James is just separating himself. And this had me also thinking about, outside of basketball, where does he stand? We think about Tom Brady, we think about Serena Williams, we think about Tiger Woods. Let's dive into the numbers. Tom Brady played to age 45 and won 7 Super Bowls. Even like just processing that blows my mind. Now, I am not a football girly. I am not that person completely. But there's some, because we talked about it in our newsroom at NBA Today. There's some people that say, okay, Tom Brady, yes, he won 7 Super Bowls and he is super successful and he was able to do this in his 4th decade of life, but he affected the game from an offensive standpoint. Like, there was not a two-way, you're not playing offense and defense. Not to diminish Tom Brady, I'm just saying LeBron James sort of has to affect all aspects of the game. Serena Williams, she played to age 41 and she has 23 major singles titles, and she just, I was rooting for her to get to Margaret Court, but she fell one singles title shy of tying Margaret Court, and then 2 obviously to surpass to be all-time singles title holder. And then Tiger Woods, he is still playing at the age of 48. He has 15 total majors, and the last time though he had won a majors title is 2019. That was at the Masters. So LeBron James, he is averaging 25 at age 39, and in year 21, on top of it, still putting the team on his back though. And it all came from this magical moment of LeBron James giving us, in year 21, a clutch time win. And then on top of it, not too long after that, touching 40K. There's no way that you don't play hard when you're experiencing greatness as his teammate in real time. LeBron James clearly is in a league of his own on the court, but then also off the court, he's been standing on business. Not just himself and his Spring Hill company, which started this movement of more than an athlete, but also in the community with his I Promise School and the LeBron James Foundation. I personally have seen LeBron James's initiative for the community back in 2020. I'm a founding member of More Than a Vote, which he launched to help empower everyone to find a way to vote, create easier pathways, and realize that your voice must be heard, especially now more than ever before. And I think this is very timely considering that we are in election year. And one thing that LeBron James realized is, even though he has a voice that matters, the collective is most important. We see his mentality in that on the court with how he plays and how he assists, but also in this More Than a Vote initiative, there was a Zoom meeting where so many celebrities were on. I mean, Kevin Hart, just the list goes on and on. And we all came together as one team to say, how are we going to go and tell our communities that look up to us as leaders, that this matters. This is the election of our lifetime. Now, I got shouted out on one of these Zoom calls because, you know, as a woman, particularly a woman broadcaster especially, we have to hustle different. And so while these top of the list celebrities were taking a lot of national media, no one really wanted to do these 7 a.m., 6 a.m. slots on CNN, on Good Morning America. And so I raised my hand and I said, I will do them. And I did those hits. And they were really impactful, not only for me as a broadcaster, but also just me being an advocate and a champion of LeBron and his initiative. And so when we're on the Zoom in front of everybody and their mom, I remember sitting back and I was like, I'm never gonna talk on this thing. These guys are like in a whole different league. They're like, Chanae, thank you so much. I was like, holy smokes, thanks, Bron. Thanks, Mav. Thanks to the whole crew for seeing the work that I do. Because I always say, you know, everything hidden in darkness will come to light. You put your work forward, and the community is better for it. I also served as an election clerk, went back to Houston, Texas, and helped literally people vote. And so to be a part of the initiative and show that, you know, we are all one team, I saw this from LeBron James in person, and he shows up for what matters, whether it's on the court or off. And so this is just one big basketball milestone, but there's so many life milestones that I think are in the future of LeBron James. So LeBron James was not the only one making history, which leads to our second big topic. Let's do a roundup on women's hoops. So I'm going to tell you the most important stories to follow as we are in March and the madness is just right around the corner. And of course, we have to start with Caitlin Clark, who made history and became the all-time leading scorer, men's or women's, in college basketball. Iconic. She broke Pistol Pete Maravich's record. Not only did she do this on senior night, dropping 33 points, I mean, my goodness, the stars that showed up. Now, Travis Scott should have gone to Maya Moore first. I love Jake from State Farm. Like a good neighbor, he's always there. But Maya Moore, that moment where she shrieked, she screamed, and seeing her idol, that's on the side. Caitlin not only wins on senior night, beating Ohio State, who beat them before, drops 33 points, and this is coming just right after she declares for the WNBA draft. But the sneaky cool thing, for all those people who are saying things about NIL and what's her deal is going to be like in the W, y'all can have several seats. She announced that she has a deal now with Gamebridge, who has the naming rights for where the Indiana Pacers and also the Fever play. What a strategic partnership. So not only does she declare for the WNBA, she is a projected number one overall pick, but now she has a deal with the arena in which she will play. There are levels to this, Caitlin. We see you. There's been a lot of chatter online about how, all we're doing, and I say we because we're the media, is telling the story of Caitlin Clark. If you believe that, then you have the wrong filters on your social media because there are so many other stories that are gonna make this a march to remember. Let's also highlight South Carolina, who the only team, men's or women's, right now in D1 college basketball to go undefeated this season. I've seen them up close and personal. This is Dawn Staley's squad. A lot of people sort of had this idea that they would not be as great, and they just produced an undefeated season. And last year, a lot of people said when they lost, all right, this is a team that clearly has perimeter shooting weaknesses. What do? They just get a transfer by name of Tahina Pau-Pau, who is top three in the NCAA in three-point shooting percentage. A lot of their perimeter players, from Bree Hall to Raven Johnson, has upped their shooting, and now they're looking like one of the most dominant teams that we have seen. Women's game just loves dynasties, right? Like, we just love having teams that can go back to back to back with championships. Not saying that they have done this, but what I'm saying is that Dawn Staley has built a perennial powerhouse that needs to be studied. So South Carolina, undefeated, is running the conference, but we definitely need to shout out Angel Reese because a lot of people, I feel like she's had the major microscope on her this season, and she just won SEC Player of the Year. She is a one-woman rebounding machine, and I love seeing her mom and also Shaq walk her out on senior night. What she has meant to the Bayou as the Bayou Barbie, especially in their aspiration to get back to the Final Four, she has backed up all of that talk and all of that swag, so I'm here for it. All right, we always talk about Caitlin, we talk about Angel Reese, but there is a real sentiment that these freshman phenoms are going to continue to carry the legacy of the women's game dominating. We're talking about Juju Watkins and also Hannah Hidalgo. So I got to meet Juju Watkins before she started her freshman year. She came to Sparks games, and one thing us Hoopers know is paying respect to respect is due. She studies the game. She is a student of the game. She loved coming and watching these amazing women of the W hoop. She knows her homework. She does her homework, and that's why she is really successful right now. I'll never forget, I fought to have a segment on ESPN highlighting how great Juju has been. And after that segment, I found maybe a day or so later that I had a flower delivery. It was Juju and her team saying, thank you for giving me a spotlight, so you deserve your flower, sis. I was like, what? This girl is wise beyond her years. But now let's talk about what she's doing on the court. She's averaging 27.8 points per game, 7.2 rebounds, 3.4 assists. Oh, your girl saw what she did to Stanford. 51 points versus my squad. She had 42 points against Colorado. She's had 22 20-plus points a game this season, and she has a chance to beat Cheryl Miller's 814 total points scored in the 1985-86 season. She's already passed Cheryl for most 30-point games in one singular season. She has led USC in scoring in 25 of 27 games, and she has the highest conference win total, 13, since 1997 for USC. So, Juju, fresh on the scene. Look, Caitlin's going to the W, but the game is in great hands. Another freshman phenom, someone whose game I was not familiar with maybe 2 years ago, that I started seeing the seeds being planted a year ago, and now she is exceeding expectations, Hannah Hidalgo. The amount of steals she gets per game, when she finishes, she will be the all-time leader. I don't know how she does it, but she puts them clamps on them as a freshman. I love what Neil Ivy has done, and I also love how Niel has touched on so many different facets of the game. She spent some time as an assistant coach in the NBA. She comes back to Notre Dame, where she served under Muffet McGraw, and now is the head coach and has these girls balling. Now, their season hasn't been as great as we expected. They suffered some injuries, but Hannah has been showtime. Hannah Hidalgo averages 24 points per game as a freshman, 6.5 rebounds, 5.4 assists, and she has 128 season steals. That is leading the country. She also broke the ACC record for most points in a season by a freshman. One thing I love about Hannah's game is that, like, she gets turned. She'll get a bucket. You can hear it on the mic. Like, ah! She'll be flexing on people. I even saw the clip where she flexed on after, you know, her opponent after making a defensive play and then was like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. That's because she's a freshman. She doesn't realize she can stand in that. Like, flex on them. You don't have to apologize. Maybe it's Coach Neal. But still, that was a cute moment because she's a freshman, she doesn't know any better, which is wild because she's giving us veteran numbers. Wow, we're saving the best for last. The Pac-12, in our final year, finally, we are like certified as the best conference in the nation. Like, it took y'all so long to realize. We've been like this, we've been deep, but it's cool. We have six teams right now in the top 25. My school, Stanford, is going to the ACC. God bless us in our travel. But still, the Pac-12 has delivered so far this season. We just got the Conference Player of the Year awards. Cam Brink, Conference Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year. Juju Watkins, Freshman of the Year. All makes sense. But what the Pac has done just raises their game. And I believe that this is the best conference entering March. We'll see multiple teams, whether it is Stanford, Oregon State, UCLA, USC. The list goes on and on, making, I think, brackets bust come this month. This is the end of what we call the Conference of Champions, and we have had some all-time greats. We're talking about Lisa Leslie, Cheryl Miller, Cynthia Cooper, Tina Thompson, Ann Myers. My goodness. I think it's a pleasure and a privilege to say I played for the Pac-10 and 12. I wish we stayed together, but it's all good. The game, again, is in great hands because the Pac-12 has three projected top first-round picks. Cam Brink at Stanford is projected the number 2 overall draft pick. She's averaging 18 points per game and 12 rebounds. And her blocks, I mean, she's a human helicopter in the paint. Alyssa Peely of Utah is projected number 8. Please, since we're talking about highlights, y'all, go check out her highlights versus South Carolina. Some of the best footwork you will see in the game. Not only on the inside, but out, knocking down threes. I see you, Alyssa. And of course, Charisma Osborne, UCLA, averaging 14 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. She dropped 32 against Cal. So watch out for these ladies at the next level. Time for my favorite part of the show, other than uplifting the women's game. It's time for Hot or Not, where I tell you some of the things happening on the court or even in pop culture. And I'll tell you whether it's hot or it's not. Let's get to it. Love is Blind. I watched all of the season, and I know the finale is coming up very soon. I'll do my recap on the next show, but I'm going to give you my power rankings of best couples on Love is Blind. Of course, at the number one spot, it is Lauren and it is Cameron, the original Love is Blind couple, and clearly the only couple that this show was meant for, because everything else has been just a hot mess. At number two, I'm gonna give it to Johnny and Amy. They just are nice people, pure people, nice people that just give joy. You can tell that she was looking for something specific, someone that accepted her and her family. And also, I love that she prioritizes her relationship with her brother who happens to be autistic. And Johnny said, you know what? I'm here for you, baby. They just look happy, they look peaceful. I have not seen 1 ounce of drama other than, you know, how we gonna manage our situation with kids. But other than that, like, they are giving all good positive vibes. So I have them at number two. At number three, I'm putting AD and Clay. But before I get to Clay, that Matthew start to the season, whom they're calling Clark Kent, I was rooting for those two. AD, Matthew, that looked like one of those flashbacks to season one, Lauren and Cameron type of trajectory. But hold on, wait a minute. That twist of Matthew just going out and saying the same thing to all the different women, that was rough. And then he was like, oh, I'm more concerned about breaking your heart on national television. No. Thankfully, AD found Clay. And I'm glad that Clay took this journey of maturity in his manhood to stick with AD, to fight for her. I loved when he brought his Bible and was reading the verses and saying, this is a woman of God that I'm looking for, like, this is ordained. And then all of his vulnerability got validated to some degree, because I know he was worried about looks. My girl, AD, a baddie. She a baddie. I don't like how people talk about her body, though. Like, those jokes on the side were peach emojis are distracting to people, but, like, when you're at a party setting and you just get engaged and you're talking about another woman's peach emoji, there's no joke. There's, like, no way to make fun of that. Just don't do it. Avoid at all costs. But still, AD and Clay, they're cute. I hope they make it. I've seen some spoilers. We'll see what happens in the finale. At number four, I'm putting Jimmy and Chelsea. Now, I personally thought that there was a stronger connection between Jimmy and Jess, but I love how Jimmy said, you're the woman for me and I'm gonna see this through. Now, watching Chelsea's experience, that Megan Fox line took me out, because I do see a little bit of the resemblance. Y'all don't play her. Like, I see a little bit of the Megan Fox resemblance, but I would never say that in a pod. Who would I say I look like? I'm not even gonna make a comp, because your girl is one of one, okay? One of one. I'm not making a comp for you. Saying that messed up. I can imagine, man, you hear that and oh my God, oh my mama, oh my hood, I'm standing for this girl. You know, like, no. That was one of her big mistakes, but I do like how even though they argue, they come back together. I still don't think that they're a strong couple, but we see commitment there, some form of commitment. Hot or not, this tweet about Caitlin Clark's earning potential. This is not hot. This is a clearly you don't understand what is happening at the professional levels. So I will explain to you. We know that college athletes can sign multiple year deals under NIL. But what Caitlin Clark is choosing to do is take being at the pinnacle, being a household name in the sport of basketball right now, and instead of going back to Iowa where her deals would be just one more year, the real earning potential Caitlin Clark just gave us the blueprint from in her deal with Gainbridge. When she goes pro, she can tap into multi-year deals with a lot of her partners who happen to be already NBA/WNBA partners. We're talking about the WNBA, we're talking about Gatorade, we're talking about Nike. When you are a pro, most people do not like to sign one-year deals like we see in NIL. We sign multi-year deals because brands want the opportunity to grow with you. She is now setting herself up as a pro to have longevity, which maximizes on her earning potential in that window. Get that? Hot or not, Mea Culpa starring Kelly Rowland and Trevante Rhodes. I am saying hot. Yes, I know this take might be the hottest take I've ever had in the history of life, but I actually enjoyed the movie. Now, I might be biased because I'm a huge Kelly Rowland fan, coming from Houston, watching Destiny's Child. My sis did her thing. Now, the scriptwriters didn't help them out much, but I mean, we had plenty of eye candy. I thought the storyline was unique. Now, the ending, I didn't really care for, and I know endings matter most, but like, I would say 80% of the film, I was locked in, I was tuned, I was on the plane, I was watching it, I was enjoying it. Tyler, Mr. Perry, These stars deserve A-level scripts and conversations. We showed up to support our people, but like we were almost there. I still enjoyed the film, so I think Mea Culpa was hot. All right, that's it for the Chanae Show. I had so much fun with you all. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, drop us a comment. Tell us what you want to see in our hot topics and our big topics. And I will see you very soon.